The casinos for table players are looking for time at the table.
Okay.
Very short sessions are not going to help you as much with table play. Overall, broad stroke, table game players get a lot less love from casinos than machine players do, aka Steve. And slot players get the most love from casinos because slots have the highest house edge. And simply put, casinos are pretty much guaranteed to make money off of slot players.
Ready to maximize your travel and casino experience from both sides of the pond? From airline miles, hotel points, and loyalty programs to living in the lap of luxury in a Las Vegas casino, you'll find all of the knowledge you need to travel in style. Welcome to ZorkCast, powered by TravelZork, helping you travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures. Now, please welcome the hosts of ZorkCast, Michael Mason Traeger, and everyone's favorite Brit, Steve White.
Welcome back to ZorkCast. We are here for another lovely episode, and this is actually Season 7, Episode 128. And the title of this episode is More Comps, Life Advice, and the Art of the Masterclass. So today I have Steve White with me. And how are you doing, Steve?
You said that like I'm not normally here. That was like a special guest intro. But I'm good, thanks. I am here every week.
You pretty much so. I realized that as it came out of my mouth. It's sort of difficult when like something comes out of your mouth and you want to pull it back in, but you can't pull it back
well,
in.
Well, I was going to make a very rude comment then, and I just managed to stop myself.
Very good. Yes, I did. I said that, but I also do those things sometimes for a reaction. Originally, the actual title for this episode was More Comps and Don't Be an Asshole. But I decided...
It's very difficult for both of us. The second part, anyway.
Yeah, this is actually going to be my ongoing advice for you, Steve. Before we record every episode and we put our notes in Slack and we discuss it a little, because believe it or not, we actually do prepare for this stuff. The number one bullet point is going to be, don't be an asshole. But anyway, it is a good life advice item. So today we're going to be talking about probably one of the number one questions that I get from listeners and also in the Facebook group, and that is casino comp advice specifically for table games. Then we're going to talk a little bit about a better way to book your travel with points. And then we're going to also talk about how amazing the concept of masterclasses can be in the realm of miles and points, even if you have a little bit of knowledge. And we're going to just then finish up with Steve explaining a little bit more about this acquisition of MGM and Cosmo, which we've talked about before, we've YouTubed about before. But basically, the news last week was that MGM takes another step in the acquisition of the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, and Steve will talk about that a little bit.
Oh, well, I'll attempt to, anyway.
Yeah, it's okay. Steve will attempt to make shit up, which hopefully nobody realizes. And then we're going to tease the ultimate casino trip a little bit, if we have time. So that's what I've got on my mind. How does that sound, Steve? Is this good? Is this a good episode?
Sounds fantastic to me.
That's wonderful. So let's just jump right into it. So what is this consistent question that we often get? And as many people know, I'm more the table player. Steve is the slot person. Some might call him, well, I won't go into that, but he likes slots quite a bit.
I do. And guilty as charged.
Exactly. Which is what makes us such good friends and what makes it sort of interesting, because we have a totally different playing philosophy.
So you mean I just press a button and hope for the best?
Yeah, exactly. We're every, you know, it's sometimes funny.
We're every casino's dream. If we were married, we would be perfect. You would go and play all the table games. I would go and play all the slots. Yeah. Did this just get a bit weird? Maybe.
Yeah, we can consider. We'll consider.
We should edit that out.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll make the absolute best couple in the world. It could be a little bit of an odd relationship. It already is an odd relationship, so it could be even more odd.
We could anyway. Take down all the casinos.
Yes, absolutely. So the consistent question I'm always getting from people is how to optimize their casino table ratings, and also how people can get more comps or get comps in general from casino table play. Now, this is a topic I love to discuss and could discuss for hours and hours and hours. So we're going to try to keep this brief and to the point. Overall, broad stroke, table game players get a lot less love from casinos than machine players do, aka Steve. And slot players get the most love from casinos because slots have the highest house edge. And simply put, casinos are pretty much guaranteed to make money off of slot players. That's pretty much so true as the broad stroke. Then you would agree with that, Steve.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily smart or stupid to play slots, because, of course, slots are quite entertaining for many people. In addition, if you are smart with the way you play and are strategic about the loyalty programs, how much you play, where you play, you know, you can get comps and experiences which you feel are of value to you and sort of offset some of that cost or house edge with regard to slots. We'll put a couple of links in the show notes, but be sure to read two articles that are on TravelZork that'll give you an overall better understanding of how casinos figure out your value, as well as how to approach a new gaming day, or particularly poignant is how to approach a new property that you've never played at before. And these two articles, Casino Comps, The Big Play Casino Gambling Day, as well as Casino Theo, It's All About the Theo, which is the average daily theoretical, are great articles to read. We'll put those in the show notes.
And this could kind of link in with the whole Cosmo thing too, particularly if you've never played there before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think you should definitely link that in when we get to that point in the episode, because I think that's very, very important. Also, as another side note, another new casino has opened, and that's Palms has reopened after yes. 2 years.
And you said Melts in? I was about to say that.
Yes, we said Melts in. We have a pretty nice overview article on TravelZork about Melts' stay at Palms, as well as the fact that Melts will be doing another article soon that's just focused on the loyalty program. But it's definitely an interesting casino to consider. It's relatively inexpensive midweek. I hear really good things about the vibe and the employees. So that's something else to check out on TravelZork. So how do you optimize your play when you want more comps from table play? And remember, comps in general can get a little bit complicated as far as like your value and how the casinos determine your value. And that's not something I'm going to go into in this episode, because it will make the episode way too long, and why I referenced those articles. So I've sort of put this down to a couple of different bullet points. Bullet point number one, and my bullet point number one and number two are really, really important. Number one is don't be an asshole. Number two is the biggest deterrent to being a successful player is basically you. So that's, does that make sense to you, Steve, when I say that? But do you agree with that somewhat?
I always agree with you.
But do you agree that most people are their own worst enemy?
Oh, yeah.
They create... Yeah, I mean, like,
especially as a slot player.
Yeah, exactly. So your quick talk about this is, you know, you first have to talk about, you know, everything has to do with what your average bet is at table games. And when you're talking about your average bet, that also has to be somewhat relational to your buy-in. Your buy-in could be your bankroll for the trip, or it could be your bankroll for the session. A lot of stuff I mean, and remember, it's really important to say that anything that has to do with money management does not change the odds of the games at all. Well, that's just how you handle your money.
Yeah, and this is the thing. It's so easy to overbet and overcommit. Even with slots, I mean, you feel like you've got a ton of money. You should probably be actually only playing like $1, $2 a spin. But where's the fun in that? You know, and I would imagine it's similar with the table games too. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but people probably overbet for their bankroll.
Yes, that's right. And that's one of the biggest problems. And I like to differentiate this whole concept of money management because we've heard people say, I've got this envelope system where I have sealed envelopes with a certain amount of bankroll for the day. When I've used up that amount of money, I don't play anymore that day.
Yeah.
That's all well and good, but quite frankly, the money that you allocate for the gambling for the entire weekend, let's call that your bankroll, is just the money you've allocated for the weekend.
Yeah, and, it's very difficult to maximize comps that way.
It's very difficult to maximize comps, and that is a money management discipline issue. That's a you issue.
Yeah.
Like, in theory, you should be disciplined enough to potentially not run through all your money in an hour and not have to go get more money. I don't think the concept personally of breaking your bankroll into envelopes necessarily removes that, you know, removes. I mean, you hear all kinds of things. I leave all my credit cards in the safe. I use my ATM card. I just have this amount of money. But that's really a you discipline thing.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with helping you win, you know, or causing you to necessarily lose. That just has to do with discipline. And I think that's important to note sometimes, because I think some of that gets a little muddy sometimes, right, Steve? Like, what's really odds and what's really money management? Or do you see that sometimes in the slot world?
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's harder to quantify when you're a slot player.
Well, the other thing is, too, and obviously not the objective of this episode, you know, slot players have all kinds of weird systems, because I poke around these Facebook groups. It's like,
you can't I go to a machine as a slot player.
Yeah, I mean, but I love slot players who say, I put $300 in, and then if I don't hit X after 8 spins, I go to another machine, and then I put 300, you know, I put...
Then I give it a rub.
Yeah, then I give it a rub. Oh, is that what she said, Steve?
We're full of innuendos this episode. That should be the title, yeah. We're full of innuendos this episode.
Yeah, maybe we'll change the tab, full of innuendos.
Well, that could be the little snippet you put at the start.
Yes, this episode is full of innuendos. You will definitely want to catch all of it. So, I mean, I think a very big point is, and this gets to the buy-in and relating to your rating at table games. First of all, yes, most people do overbet what they're supposed to bet at a given session. The other problem is if you're overbetting, you're going to run out of money rather quickly unless you have a lot of luck and variance is on your side. There's a couple of things going on here. Let's just pretend conceptually you're aiming for a $100 rating or a $100 average.
And just for someone who's a slot player, what does that mean exactly? How does that work? Is that your average bet across a set amount of time? Or
exactly.
Okay.
So you're going to be at the table, like, say that's going to be your average wager or your average bet for the game over the period of time. And that average bet is going to be used to determine your comps and more so, or even more important, and we'll get to this a little bit later, your marketing offer.
So is it better, therefore? Sorry if I'm asking random questions.
No. This is good.
Is it better to play for a short amount of time with a bigger bet? Or is it better to grind away for a long amount of time with a smaller bet? To say 30 minutes versus betting, I don't know, $100 versus 5 hours betting an average of $25. I know that's just low random numbers, but, or 10 minutes overall, of betting $1,000 a hand.
Overall, the casinos for table players are looking for time at the table.
Okay.
Very short sessions are not going to help you as much with table play. Now, where it gets tricky is, you know, the example you just gave. In general, for comps to really start to get good with table play, and this is such a generalized way to put it, because you've got downtown Las Vegas, you have jurisdictions that are not Las Vegas, you've got all kinds of places.
Sure.
In general, you're looking, let's say you're looking for over $100 average. So the question is, you know, if you wanted to say, is it better to play a half hour with a $300 average as opposed to 3 hours with a $100 average, I would say the 3 hours with the $100 average is going to be better for you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's comparing 100 to 300, which is a lot different than comparing 100 to 25.
Okay.
Even though, because basically the way the casinos look at it in a broad stroke is small table players, you're not risking enough money and they just don't comp that much. And because the games in general have a relatively low house edge, some a ridiculously low house edge, even when you're not playing the best versions of them. So there just isn't much they can do for what we used to call, in casino parlance, you would call people red chip players, green chip players, red chip for, you know, nickels or $5, uh-huh. Green chips for quarter chips. So you really, you know, in order for a casino to start to pay attention to you, you have to start to be north of $100.
There's nothing really that would work in the sense of, like, you see people on YouTube who make these videos about, say, playing roulette, and they go in together, one bet's black, one bet's red, so they're never really losing, they're balancing out. There's no way of doing that to generate comps.
Usually not. And remember, even if someone's doing it that at roulette, you still have the house edge there,
yeah.
Because even with red and black, you still have a zero.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that comes
zero,
up.
So. And maybe even triple zero.
Yeah, so you can't really... Offsetting bets is a really, really tricky thing to try to do as far as comp hustling. It's... I wouldn't say it's near impossible, but it's really pretty difficult, yeah, to do. And roulette on top of it is a relatively high house edge game. You know, one of the important things is when you open up, when you buy in, that is when the casino is going to start to make some determination of, like, who you are, what you are, and how you're going to be rated.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to buy in at a casino for a certain amount of money, and then they're going to watch your first couple of bets very, very closely. Those first couple of bets are going to be entered into the casino, and they're going to lock in some kind of average to begin with. That average that they lock in is very, very important, because casino supervisors are busy. They're not constantly going to be readjusting your wagers. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make, and it's a total... Not that it's so much of a mistake, but it's a total understandable philosophy, is that people want to start betting small and then increase their bets if they're winning or they feel things are going well.
And is that because of how the brain works, do you think, when it comes to gambling?
I think so. But the problem is, if they lock you in, if they open you up on $25 bets, you are now literally, you know, swimming upstream to get your rating up.
Yeah.
Right? Because now at some point, someone's going to have to rate you north of 100 to average out those 25s to get it. But the problem is, they've sized you up when you got to the table, and they've sized you up as a $25 player. So now you're going to sort of have to undo that.
Right.
That's not so easy. So what you want to do is you want to open up with higher bets that are representative of the rating that you would like to have, even if you will not always be betting at that higher level.
Sure.
That's hard for some people because, I mean, it could go both ways, right? If you open up with higher bets and you win those first few bets, then you feel great. If you lose those first few bets, then you feel like you've been beaten up a little bit. But that really is the way to do it. And I mean, I think it's great to have the discipline to do that and feel that it's okay. I believe the math, you know, I mean, hey, sometimes I win some, I lose some.
Mm-hmm.
With low house edge games like blackjack, craps, baccarat, basically the math is the math. It is extremely frustrating to lose a number of bets that are your first opening bets, especially if they're a little bit higher than they would regularly be, because I understand that is extremely frustrating. I have had at least two times in my life where I have lost, I believe it was the first 8 or 9 bets in a row at Baccarat, which is actually fucking skill.
I was going to say, is that a new skill? But that must be soul-destroying, too, to an extent.
Soul-destroying and skillful. because honestly, in a game like Baccarat, which is basically a 50-50 proposition, to lose the first 8 or 9 bets means that you're doing everything the opposite of the way it's... Again, it's absolutely soul-destroying. It is horrible. But well, the thing about it is you have to have enough money for the session to say, that's okay, I'm going to play this entire shoe and see how it goes. And I had one shoe once in Baccarat, and a shoe is like all the decks that you're going to be playing.
Yeah.
In Baccarat, it's 8 decks. And I had one where I did lose the first 8 bets. I was down thousands of dollars, but I played the entire shoe, and I wound up ending up, you know, about plus $1,000 for the shoe. But a good point here was I had enough ammunition. I had enough bullets to lose those first 8 bets. And I also either had enough alcohol in me or enough stubbornness to know that I'm not going to continue losing every single bet for the rest of this shoe.
I think it was the stubbornness.
Yes, but that's important to, you know, that's just something important to understand. The other thing is how that relates to your, you know, your session bankroll, which could be, you know, your session bankroll and buy-in, and what your loss limit is. Now, if you want to be a player that's going to be rated more than $100, then chances are you need to buy in for a couple of $1,000s, because that makes sense. So buying in for like $5,000. There is no way from a standpoint of looking that if you buy, first of all, buying in for $400 and expecting to get rated for over $100 is not going to happen. Buying in for over $400 and starting your bets at $25, if that's the table minimum, is not going to get you rated over $100. Mm. And buying in for $400 and pushing out bets of $150 for your first few bets is a great way to have no money in 10 minutes. And also, I mean, there's no logic to the fact of buying in and then buying in and then buying in and then buying in. You are, remember, think of it this way. I mean, like this, when you come to this table game, it's like a job interview, right? Like they're sizing you up. Like, who are you? How much are you playing? What's your playing style? How am I going to rate this customer? And obviously, casinos want to please their customers. So you want to buy in with an amount of money that's appropriate to what you think you're going to bet. I mean, that sort of makes sense, right? You want to look like, if you want to be rated a $200 average, you want to look like a person who should be rated a $200 average. And that probably means that you're not buying in. Well, it definitely means that you're not buying in for $500. Would that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And is this based on you being a new player? I mean, they're going to have some information on you already if you've played there before, right?
Yeah, but usually most sessions when you buy in, nobody's looking at very, very strongly at historical. The historical thing is a legitimate thing that comes into account when hosts start to look at your play. It also comes into account with your overall theoretical at the property. Mm-hmm. So that's why, and this is actually really smart that you brought that up. That's why if you have a solid $400 average at a property, and that's what the casino sees you at, and that's the data that they have, you don't want to go and play table games in the morning, like your coffee dice, you know, when you go to grab your coffee and you're just fooling around with $200 or $300. You really don't want to be rated then, because there's nothing good that's going to come from being rated. If you've got a really good average, be it 150, 200, 250, 300, and let's just pretend, which is fantasy land these days, that there is a $5 dice game in the morning, you don't want to. But you know what? Places like Mohegan Sun, where I used to play a lot, that was totally the situation, where there were $5 tables in the morning. And at night, when I was really serious, I had a very solid average at craps and Baccarat. But I would go with my coffee, my Starbucks. I'd usually order another coffee at the table. I love iced coffee, iced espresso, especially at Wynn Las Vegas. Iced espresso at the tables is da bomb. Really, really good. Probably has more than 150 milligrams of caffeine, which is in my Slingshot Nitro Flash Brew right now that we were talking about. But I used to go in the morning and buy in for $200 and play $5 dice, $6, $6, you know, $6, $8, like really tiny bets. And I don't want that in a computer because I don't want my strong average being blended with my very weak average. And that very weak average is getting you very few procure points, very little Theo. So all it could do is make you look like a confusing player, right?
Well, and that's very that's very similar with slots too. Like if you often will go and play slots with a certain amount of coin in, and you decide that you're going to be in Vegas just for a couple of hours, you don't want to go in and play slots just for a couple of hours and ruin that really good coin in that you've got built up in the past, because then it'll ruin your average.
Right. No, that is sort of similar. The only difference here is, how would I put it? And a lot of this is, these are observations that Steve and I have over years of doing this stuff.
Yeah,
Some of it has specific nuance at certain casinos, the way they deal with certain things.
Yeah, my example would be, for instance, I really love playing video poker at Chandelier at Cosmopolitan because of the drinks. So sometimes I will go and play there, even if I'm staying somewhere else. But I don't ever play with my card when I'm playing 25% video poker in the morning, having sort of a few breakfast cocktails, a nice Bloody Mary or whatever. I don't want them to rate me based on my video poker play, because normally I'm in there playing all day, playing slots, which generates more comp for me.
And I agree with that 100%. The only difference I think a little bit with slots is, if you are going to play a lot in the course of that day, I don't think a little bit of small play here and there, as long as it's all in the same day.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about if I was just going to go there for the morning, play some video
poker. Right. Whereas with table games, I don't think it's good to ever have those low table averages in there, even if you're playing bigger later. Because with slots, there isn't, you see, when somebody looks at you, like a host looks at your profile, slot players, like, they play $10 denomination, they play $1, they play 88 cents, they're all over the place. But all the games have a really high house edge, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I don't think you could necessarily say that a guy that plays a lot of $25 slots, because he dropped down to 88 cent slots, makes him not necessarily a strong player.
No, that's
true. But what's interesting with table games, what's interesting, and that's why I think it's a little different, a guy who's a $200 average at blackjack, you want to be thought of as a $200 average player. You don't ever want any opportunity for someone to say, but is he a $200 average player, or is he a $25 player, or is he only sometimes a $200 player?
Yeah.
So my theory here, or my thought over the years, has been, why risk it? If they only see you as a $200 or more player, let them only see you as a $200 or more player. Even though, you say you played 6 hours later in the day and your average was 280, and then in the morning you played for a half hour and your average was $15, I just don't see why risk having that $15 average in there, because it's not going to get you anything, really. So why risk it? Whereas I think with slots, that's a little bit different, if you know what I mean, you know, in the total day play. You know, that's something to keep in mind. The other thing is, with tables, remember, human beings are rating you. That's why we come back to the don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, tip your dealers. You want the dealers on your side. You often want to have them in on the action. So maybe put them on top of your bet. All kinds of ways you can do that. That's another interesting episode. Also, tip your cocktail waitresses. Treat everybody well. This is important also at tables. And I know somebody might say to me, but what does it matter if I tip the cocktail waitress well at tables? Well, you know what? When you're at a slot machine, it's just between you and a machine.
Yeah.
The machine actually is not going to rate you differently or think differently of you if you're an asshole and you stiff the cocktail waitress, which you should never do. She might not come back and give you any more drinks, but the rating isn't there. But you know what? If the supervisor, the box man, the dealer notices that you're stiffing the cocktail waitress or not treating the cocktail waitress well, guess what? That comes back to the don't be an asshole. And believe me, you know, other employees don't like that. And that could potentially affect your rating or affect how much discretion they're going to give you. Does that make sense? I mean, 100%. I don't think a lot of people have ever mentioned that before.
That does make sense.
But, you know, but honestly, you know, taking care of your dealers and also taking care of anyone else that you interact with. And of course, you want good cocktail service, right? Duh.
Yeah.
So always be kind to your dealers. If there is an error, always be polite. You should always be looking for errors at table games. That would be another great episode. Also, the other thing is, you know, sometimes errors, like they make an error and they don't pay you enough. Well, that's one thing. Then there's the other type of error where they accidentally overpay you. Sometimes that happens very quickly. You don't even notice it. You take the chips, whatever. The one point I will make, which is a really, really big point, if you ever do get overpaid and you take those chips and you collect it and somebody might notice it a little bit later, or there's a little bit of delayed, or a supervisor notices it, never fight over an overpayment, like, because no good things will ever come of that. Does that make sense to you, Steve? I mean,
yeah,
that's
so
a,
I was going to ask you, so what happens in that case? You have to give it back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen big arguments before. I've only seen it once or twice at a dice table, and usually with people with decent denominations, and something will happen, and they paid the player, and then the person's shooting, and a roll's happening, and the box man will say something, or supervisor will say something, and they'll say to the player, we overpaid you $110, and you need it back. Now, usually, most players should be aware of what their payouts are, and usually most people say, oh, I didn't realize, or oh, did that happen, or oh, okay, and they'll just give the chips back, and life moves on.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to fight that, you better damn well be sure that you are absolutely correct, because they will go to cameras.
And have you ever been in that situation?
I know it's happened at least once or twice to me. I mean, what is really tough at certain games...
But have you fought it?
No, because usually it isn't. I've fought errors.
You knew you weren't right, basically. You knew you'd been overpaid.
Right.
Okay.
Usually what happens is it's something where, you know, the problem with craps is that you're getting paid so quickly, and then the dice are going, and then you're rolling, and you're picking up the chair. You're like, wait, something's wrong with this. Or what sometimes happens is they've paid you for a bet that you're not on, or that you have off, or something like that. Hey, if they made an error, absolutely bring it to their attention. But don't be a wise guy if you get overpaid and you know, or you have a pretty good sense that you did, but you put the chips in your rail really, really quickly. You know, don't fight it unless you know you're absolutely right. And I know this is a weird nuance, but you also need to be aware of bets that do not get rated. This is a crap-specific thing, and at craps, things like the odds bets don't get rated, so you need to figure out your strategy. Is your strategy okay to play the game with the best odds or to get the best rating? And a lot of times, strategically, at least when you open up your bets, you would like to open up getting the best rating. This is really a craps player thing, because free odds don't pay the house anything, and most casinos do not rate the odds. Actually,
see, I would not know that. This is useful information, because I would definitely not know that.
Right. And here's the caveat there. I could almost say that all casinos don't rate the odds bet. There's been examples of one or two casinos that have rated the odds bet, and it's never good for you when they rate the odds, because then they adjust the Theo to the game as if everybody is taking full odds.
Okay.
So then if you don't take full odds, you're actually going to be hurt. But that's another nuance. The other thing is, like we were saying, you know, this whole buy-in amount relating to what you have. Now, you've got that buy-in. And that's really, really important in that bankroll. But you also need to have a loss limit. You need to go in with a plan here. Now, your plan could very well be, I'm going to buy in for $5,000 and I'm going to play until I win or I lose. Now, when we're doing something where you're trying to hustle a little bit more and get rated a little bit better, you're usually buying in for more than you're willing to risk. This gets back to discipline. So if your loss limit is 2,000 and you buy in for 2,000, then obviously the 2,000 is gone, you're gone. But say you want to buy in for 5,000 because you want to look like a larger player to the casino, which is a good thing. You have to have that same discipline when you hit the loss limit of 2,000 that you color up and you're gone. If you don't have, and this is a you thing again, if you don't have that discipline, then you've got to rethink some of this. But strategically, that is a good way to go. And here I'm going to give one of my favorite side note stories, Steve.
Okay. I was going to say, we always love a story.
This is story time years ago about a guy who told me he was having a really bad gambling day. And of course, the details are modified and they're from my memory. So God knows what the story really was.
Are you sure it wasn't you?
Yes. And someone said, you know, how's it going? And someone says, you know, it's horrible. This casino really sucks. How many times have you heard that before? You've heard that quite a bit.
Many,
right?
A time
right. And then you say, wait a second, but weren't you doing really well a little while ago when you got here? And then the person says something to you like, yeah, I was up like $8,000, but now I'm down $3,000.
Yeah.
And this is important rule, and you know this from slots too. You know, important rule, don't expect to bankrupt the casino. If you win a few thousand dollars, you are a huge winner. You have accomplished your goal, and it is on you if you give back your entire winning. And this is a question I'm going to pose for you, Steve. What's worse than just having bad luck and losing? And I would say having good luck, then giving it all back, and then giving more back and coming out negative.
What oh, yeah. Agree? That, like, that is definitely worse. Because you just think, I wish I'd have done this. What if? Any kind of what if is bad.
Right. Like, I've had gambling trips where no session seems to be good. And every single time I seem to lose. And I just accept that as part of gambling. But I will tell you, if I win a bunch of money and then I come out negative, to me, that's far worse. Because that's totally on me.
Yeah.
I had some good luck. Things were going my way. Variance was on my side. I won some money, and I decided to keep playing to a point where I've lost that money back, and now I'm chasing money that I won. That's insane.
Yes, I agree. 100%.
Yeah, so I often say that. So that whole discipline thing we talked about, the don't be an asshole we talked about, a lot of things are really on you. Before you leave a table, you always need to ask about what your rating is. You should always be kind, and it's not a bad thing to ask for a bit more than you think you deserve. You should have an idea of what you deserve in the realm of possibility. It is important to ask before you walk away from a table, because sometimes they have incorrect data or something's not right. Also, be prepared for my favorite question, which happens about 22.8% of the time when I ask, what do you got me in for while I'm coloring up? And a supervisor says, what would you like to be rated?
What is your answer in that situation?
Usually I keep it because it's great when someone's doing that. That's wonderful. Usually I say to myself, okay, this is my actual average. This is my high point average. Like, I have all this going on in my head because I'm always thinking about this. And then I usually give them the high end of the range. So if my actual was $165, and that's because I've gone up to $300, down to $60, you know, if my actual is like about $180, but I know I had some bets out there for $250 or $300, I will probably just ask for $350, of which case they'll probably smile and say, how about $275? Which would have been better than $180.
And they're normally cool with that?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You know, sometimes I wind up with like $10 more than I should, or $20 more than I should, or every once in a while. And remember, this is so not an exact science. Someone will say, we have got you taken care of. Like, you're cool. And they won't give you an answer. That's also fine. I find that whenever anybody says that, they really do have me taken care of. They're not lying at all. Remember, you've been tipping the dealers. You've been a pretty decent player. You've been doing everything the way you've been. You've been cordial. There's no reason for them to screw you. So if you ask what your rating is and the supervisor says, don't worry, we've got you covered, or you're good, then just accept the you're good. I mean, in my opinion, it's like ask once, get the information, go over the information, ask for a little bit more. If somebody tells you, we've got you covered, don't worry, we're cool, you really should believe it, because I do believe it's a little bit of an asshole move to be like, okay, yeah, but I really want to know what you have me at. And honestly, this is the reason why, because they might have you at something even a little bit higher than you deserve, and they don't want to verbalize that. So they don't want to shout out in front of everybody that. So just use your sense here, you know, like when I'm saying, you know, ask what you're rated, you know, this isn't like if they won't tell you or they tell you you're cool, then just take it like that. This is not like an exact black and white science. The other thing that's really important is keep your sessions to more than 2 hours. Casinos take that much more seriously with table players. Mm-hmm. Also, understand what you're trying to accomplish. marketing offers are usually more valuable than discretionary comps. So don't get yourself so caught up on discretionary comps or the pit giving you a comp or getting an extra comp. You know, don't play higher than you need to for that, because really what you're playing for is to get good marketing offers. Like, I would say any player who is under a $500 average is really playing for room and marketing offers. And when I say marketing offers, like, come visit us again, we're going to give you a room and $500 in match play and $800 in food, as opposed to what's going to be taken off in addition on your bill. And also know how casinos rate. It's usually by time, not by the shoe. Some games like Baccarat, they were finding that some players were just naturally slowing it down too much, so they started rating it by the shoe. What that means is that they consider a Baccarat shoe 1.5 hours of action. So if you play an entire shoe, you get an hour and a half of rating. If the guys at the table are squeezing the cards super duper slow and the shoe takes 4.5 hours, you still only get an hour and a half of rating. Yeah, yeah, so yeah, I mean, and that depends on the casino, but usually it's very much a Baccarat thing. So that's all my advice for table players.
Well, that's some really good advice.
I think so. I mean, and I think in a broad stroke on a difficult topic. I also wanted to mention really, really quickly that there is a new website that I originally found out by from God Save the Points called point.me. And it's a better way to book your points. It's really cool. I will put links in the show notes, but seriously, like, I have no affiliation with them, but this is a way that you could say you want to fly from X to Y.
Yeah.
It'll tell you how many points you need, what programs you need it in, and it will even then relate it to what programs you could transfer, like whether it's American Express membership rewards or Chase Ultimate rewards. And it's the kind of thing where you could say, well, I've got membership rewards points. So this is a really, really good, I don't know everything in the world about it, but it's really cool. Many people have tried to do this before. This actually works.
And is it only geared at US?
Well, it's geared towards US, but remember, the transfer partners for American Express are basically the same.
Yeah.
Except sometimes the transfer ratios are sometimes different. So it's just as useful. It's geared towards US, but it would be just as useful for someone in the UK to find awards. Well, first of all, finding the awards are the same.
Yes.
Chris Flyer is the same number of points if you live in the UK.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or if you live in the US. But I think that would be great. And I also found out about a little bit more about it when I was watching a masterclass by Julia of GeoBreeze. You might remember her. She was at
ZorkFest
at the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the podcaster event. She has these really great masterclasses. Like, I think they're really great because they're extremely well put together. She puts huge effort into putting these masterclasses together and the materials and the guests. And it is just a great way for people learning about miles and points or wanting to brush up on certain topics to really learn about some of these things. And she does the masterclasses once per month. I think you could buy them individually or you could sign up for her Patreon. I'll put a link. Once again, we have no affiliation or don't get anything, but I was so impressed by the point.me masterclass that I joined that gave an overview of it. So I think that's something you should definitely look for if you're looking to just increase your knowledge of travel loyalty, tips and tricks, travel hacking, miles and points.
That sounds great to me. I'm definitely going to check it out.
That's awesome. So we're just going to finish today with MGM takes another step in the acquisition of the Cosmopolitan Las Vegas. We will
link to one of them. It's getting closer and closer, isn't it?
What does this mean now that they get another step? Like, does this really mean anything
well,
to the average, ordinary human right now?
Well, this is basically the Nevada Gaming Control Board recommending approval of this deal. So I would assume, based on that, that it's pretty much a done deal. But it now has to go to the Gaming Commission, who then formally will license this whole takeover. And I believe that's on May 19th. It's basically a done deal.
So even though everyone was talking about it before like it was a done deal, this is sort of codifies it or makes it officially a done deal. And then the things like the integration with MGM Rewards that's going to come down the road. Like, all those things will start to fall into place.
Yeah, and that's going to be take some time, too, because that's going to be consolidated once. And I think it says this in the article, once all the systems are compatible. So once they work out how quickly that can be done. I mean, I think was it Borgata? It took them quite a long time to fully integrate the rewards program. Is that right?
Yes, it did. So, I mean, and there are a lot of caveats with that kind of thing.
The only thing that will definitely change within the first 90 days is the sports book. The deal with William Hill, which is current, will end, and BetMGM will integrate into that. That is what they've said they expect to take 90 days. They have also mentioned that they're in the process of integrating their loyalty program. So who knows? I mean, I feel like it would take a while, but maybe they'll surprise us and it'll be much quicker.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in their best interest to have it go a little bit quicker, but yeah. I just don't know. I'm usually not a pessimistic person, but when it comes to merging loyalty programs, I am. So what do you think, Steve, for the average player, if they play at Cosmo and MGM, what should they do? And if they've never played at Cosmo before, what should they do? Any good advice for like an average human? We're not talking about huge players.
I would just carry on playing as you're playing if you play at both. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily burn Cosmo because we don't know if when this integration happens, if some of that data is going to be taken into account. If you currently do not play at Cosmo, I probably would focus my attention on MGM because that's ultimately what the program's going to be, and your comps are going to be related to that, I would say. If you've got a host at Cosmo, I probably wouldn't be too worried because if you're playing at that sort of level, I don't think this is going to affect you in a negative way. I haven't really considered, though, if you're a big Cosmo player and you've never played at MLife. Well, MGM Rewards is now called. God, MLife. That's a blast from the past.
Well, I think at that point, your host at Cosmo is going to take care of things. I think the only people that are really at risk are people that are not particularly loved by MGM.
Yes.
You know, people who might have played and then short played at MGM, taken advantage of marketing offers and not given play. And if for some reason they're coded as a marketing restriction or their offers are restricted and then it's merged with Cosmo and things were pretty good at Cosmo, that can get a little bit dicey. But that's an outlier to me.
This could open up to a lot of players the opportunity to stay at the Cosmo comp. Because I would say if you're getting comps at the likes of Bellagio and Aria, you're going to get comps at Cosmo.
Right. And we will share our thoughts in another episode about what's going to happen with Luminous and the travel booking from there.
That's going to be coming to an end, isn't it? But yeah, so
yeah.
And Marriott doesn't really have a decent property still in Vegas. Right. So anyway, we'll come on to that.
And this is a great segue into the fact of consider getting your next quote for travel from TravelZork. Travel. You could visit our quote request form at travelzorktravel.com. We did receive the sad news recently that Conrad is no longer part of a luxury program, but on many dates, Cosmopolitan has some decent rates for entry-level programs as part of the Marriott Luminous program. And Cosmopolitan is still giving you $75 a day for breakfast, which you can even use for in-room dining as part of the Marriott Luminous luxury program. So that is definitely something to consider. Also, feel free to send us a message at tips@travelzork.com if you have something you'd like to talk about. We do want to talk about in the future the ultimate casino, like birthday trip or fantasy trip. So Steve and I have been thinking about that a little bit. To support the show, visit zorkoffer.com. We also have live chat on the Travel Zork website if you want to get in contact with us another way. So is there anything else you would like to leave us with today, Steve?
I just want to say keep enjoying Vegas.
Wow, I got you on the spot.
Yeah, you did get me on the spot. I was like, what the hell am I going to say to that?
I know, this is what I know. I know, but you were very kind because you followed the instruction from the beginning of the episode. Don't be an asshole. So thank you for joining us today. This is a really fun conversation. And until next time.
You've reached the end of your stay with us on this episode, but we encourage you to visit our website for more resources at travelzork.com and to continue the conversation on Twitter and Insta at TravelZork and on the ZorkCast Facebook group. Travel smarter, gamble smarter, and maximize your adventures right here on ZorkCast. Until next time, dream big and remember, a dollar won is twice as sweet as a dollar earned.